Imagine your car's check engine light flashes every single time you hit a pothole.
Oh, yeah.
And after a few weeks of this, you stop taking it to the mechanic. You just put a little piece of black tape over the dashboard and you keep driving.
I mean, we've all been there with our cars, but yeah.
Right. But today we're looking at a real-world cybersecurity test where that exact scenario, like ignoring those constant noisy alarms, allowed attackers to just walk right through the front door.
Sure.
And they took the master keys to the network and they casually were reading the security team's own internal emails. So welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily.
It is a terrifying scenario, but it really is the reality of operating in a modern enterprise environment today. I mean, we spend so much time marveling at the cinematic nature of cyber attacks, right? Like
Oh, absolutely.
shadowy advanced persistent threats or the zero-day malware. And we just forget that defense is mostly about process. It's about structure and managing just an overwhelming amount of noise.
Yeah, and so today's deep dive is really a high signal cybersecurity briefing, and we're focused squarely on those defender actions. We have a stack of recent reports that paint this incredibly detailed picture of what it actually takes to defend a network right now.
Yeah, the data we have today is great.
It is. We are looking at critical vulnerabilities that were just added to the federal watch list. We've got a massive FBI takedown of a state-sponsored obfuscation network. And we have a literal side-by-side comparison of two security operations centers fighting off the exact same attack techniques.
Yeah, and that CISA Red Team assessment comparing the two organizations is really the crown jewel here. We almost never get to see a controlled experiment like that out in the wild.
No, you really don't.
It exposes the sort of uncomfortable truth that surviving a breach isn't just about the software tools you purchase, it's entirely about how you empower the people sitting behind the keyboards.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Because before we can look at how defenders react to active breaches, we really have to understand the baseline, or like the foundational cracks that they are trying to patch on a daily basis. So CISA just added, I think it was six new flaws to his known exploitive vulnerabilities catalog, the KEV.
That's right.
And we are looking at high severity flaws impacting Citrix NetScaler and Linux and SQL Server. But there's one specific flaw that's under like aggressive active exploitation right now.
Yeah, CVE-2026-8452. The telemetry on this current campaign is wild. Security firms like Diffuse Cyber and Providian have been tracking the exploitation of this specific vulnerability very closely.
Okay, and what are they seeing?
Well, attackers are using it to drop web shells. So they're essentially planting these malicious scripts that act as persistent backdoors on the compromised servers. And they are naming these files incredibly inconspicuous things like x.php or z.php just to blend in with normal server architecture.
Sliding totally under the radar.
Exactly. And once they get that initial foothold, they just run basic discovery commands, things like id or echo, just to map out the system and figure out exactly what permissions they've acquired.
Right. And the scale of this isn't localized either. The telemetry shows, I was reading 36 attempts over just 12 days from 12 unique IPs. And this is bouncing from Switzerland to Vietnam, through Germany and Japan, the Netherlands, Russia, Singapore, Turkey, the US. It's everywhere.
Yeah, it's the global net.
So it proves this isn't like a targeted sniper shot. It's a highly distributed automated dragnet. And we're seeing reports pointing to a Chinese cybercrime group tracked as UAT-10147. And they're just aggressively scanning for these Windows and Linux web servers across, education, tech, and the gaming sectors.
Yeah, and because of that, CISA has issued these urgent deadlines for federal civilian executive branch agencies. They have to patch this specific flaw along with another older one by August 29th, 2026. And the rest of the recent additions have to be patched by September 9th.
Which is a really tight turnaround.
It is. But the bigger issue is actually addressed in a vulnerability review that CISA released alongside these mandates. They looked at the root causes of insecure software over the 2024 and 2025 fiscal years, and the trend lines are they're just going in the wrong direction.
I saw those numbers. It's bad. Injection weaknesses emerged as the dominant category, right? We're talking about something like 7,700 reported CVEs in 2024. And then it jumps massively to over 21,000 in 2025.
Yeah, a massive leap.
Mechanically speaking, what is failing here? Like,
Yeah.
why are we constantly patching the exact same fundamental holes?
Well, at its core, an injection weakness is basically a failure of input validation. It happens when a program takes untrusted data from a user, so like text typed into a search bar or a login field, and it accidentally processes that as an executable command.
Okay, so the system implicitly trusts whatever it is handed.
Exactly. If a developer doesn't build in strict boundaries separating user data from the underlying database commands, an attacker can simply type in a malicious script and the server will just dutifully execute it. And along with memory safety issues, these improper input validation flaws are just disproportionately high on CISA's KEV release list right now.
So why the massive spike, though? I mean, from 7,000 to 21,000 in a single year, that isn't just a gradual decline in code quality. Something major shifted.
Right, something shifted. Yeah. And that something is artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
AI is now actively being used by threat actors to automate this vulnerability discovery and the exploitation side of it.
Oh, of course.
What used to take, you know, a team of human researchers weeks of manual code review can now be done in minutes. AI models are just scanning exposed assets. They're identifying these input validation failures, and then they're automatically chaining them together to build exploits.
So if the software industry is building a skyscraper, an injection flaw isn't like a broken window on the 50th floor. It's more like a hollow steel beam right in the foundation.
That's a great way to put it.
And we keep trying to add heavier locks to the doors and issuing patches after the fact, while AI is out there basically x-raying the entire steel structure for weaknesses at light speed.
Yes, that foundation analogy is critical. CISA is screaming from the rooftops that software providers have to address these underlying weaknesses during the development phase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, AI is helping development teams ship code up to 50 times faster today.
Right.
But if security practices fall behind that accelerated pace, the resulting foundational cracks are exactly what these highly sophisticated actors rely on to build out their infrastructure.
Which connects directly to our next report, actually.
Yeah.
Because if developers are leaving these foundational flaws wide open, who is actually capitalizing on that? And the answer is, it's not just script kiddies looking to deface a website,
right? Tell it all.
Well, the year is nation states building massive camouflage networks out of our unpatched routers and smart devices.
Yeah, so the Department of Justice and the FBI just announced the disruption of a massive operational network known as QTFY.
Right.
They dismantled two specific hacking platforms called QScan and QTrouter. And the FBI documents explicitly state this infrastructure was operated by a Chinese state-sponsored group employed by the Nanjing Xinjiwe Network Technology Company.
Just a front company, basically. And according to the unsealed court documents, that company's client list includes China's Ministry of State Security and the People's Liberation Army, which is, I mean, that's heavy hitting. And security researchers like Damon Rouse over at Lumen Black Lotus Labs, they've been tracking this digital quartermaster since, I think, May 2018.
Yeah, they've been at this a while.
And they have confirmed intrusions into NASA, the Federal Reserve, the Department of Energy, and multiple health and science agencies. But they also seem to have a really heavy focus on the academic sector.
Yeah, and that academic targeting is such a fascinating strategic choice. Threat actors love hitting research communities because advanced science is inherently collaborative.
Oh, sure. Because you're sharing data.
Right. Universities are designed to be open environments. Researchers share massive data sets across borders. They frequently grant access to external partners. And that openness is the core feature of the scientific method. But in cybersecurity, it translates directly into a broader and softer attack surface.
Okay, so let's look at how QScan actually operates to build this infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mechanics here show exactly how those foundational software flaws are weaponized at a global scale.
Right. So QScan acts as the automated acquisition engine. It just constantly scans the global internet looking for vulnerable Internet of Things devices.
IoT stuff.
Yeah, home routers, security cameras, smart appliances. These are devices that are always plugged in, always connected, and almost never patched by their owners.
Never. I mean, who updates their fridge?
Exactly nobody. So when QScan finds a vulnerable device, it exploits it and adds it to the broader Q2 router network.
So it's essentially a botnet, but reading this, the architecture feels far more sophisticated than just a swarm of infected refrigerators launching a DDoS attack.
Oh, it's much more sophisticated.
Well,
the attackers install custom software, specifically an open source operating system called OpenRoute, onto these compromised routers. So this turns the consumer device into a dedicated routing node for the attackers. But they don't stop there. The FBI noted that this infrastructure blends these infected IoT devices with commercial proxy services and leased virtual private servers. And it all authenticates back to a central administration server at www.qtproxy.xyz.
Okay, so they construct a layered network. Like, The entry point might be a legitimate commercial proxy, then the mid-tier is leased infrastructure, and then the exit node is a compromised home router in just some residential neighborhood.
Right, and what's fascinating here is the sheer camouflage that this blending provides. QTrouter allows the threat actors to completely conceal the true origin of their intrusions. To a defender who's looking at the network logs, the inbound traffic does not look like it is coming from a data center in Nanjing.
Right, it looks local.
Exactly. It looks like it's coming from endpoints geolocated completely outside of China and often from IP addresses that are local to the targeted corporate networks. See, I have to challenge this from a defensive perspective, though. If an attacker's malicious traffic is bouncing off a compromised smart fridge down the street from my corporate office, it looks completely local. The IP address literally belongs to a local residential internet service provider.
Mm-hmm.
So how on earth is a defender supposed to spot that anomaly? It feels like the perfect disguise.
It is a great disguise. And when the external signal is perfectly camouflaged, relying on your perimeter defense is just a losing battle. You cannot block every local IP address.
Mm-hmm.
Spotting that kind of sophisticated obfuscation requires flawless internal visibility.
Internal visibility.
Right. You have to assume the perimeter will be breached, and you must build the capability to detect the anomalous behavior once the traffic is already moving laterally inside the network. You need internal tripwires, and crucially, the organizational ability to respond the second one of those tripwires is tripped. Which leads us to, I think, the most revealing document in our stack today. Because CISA recently put real-world defenders to the ultimate test to see how they handle that exact requirement for internal visibility. The advisory is titled A Tale of Two SOCs, and it details simultaneous red team assessments against two critical infrastructure organizations.
Yeah, and for context for the listeners, a red team assessment is a highly realistic exercise where ethical hackers employed by CISA mimic advanced threat actors using real-world tradecraft.
So it's not a simulation, it's a real attack, just by the good guys.
Exactly. In this case, Target A was a government services and facilities sector organization, and Target B was a water and wastewater systems sector entity. And the headline finding is sobering. Both organizations were fully compromised at the domain level. The red team reached their most sensitive business systems and their cloud resources.
Okay, hold on. They both lost the domain. So if both environments were fully compromised, what makes this a tale of two SOCs? Like, it sounds like they both just failed.
Well, the difference lies entirely in the defensive outcomes and their internal responses to the breach. To understand the contrast, we really have to trace the attack path first. In both cases, the red team gained initial access through the simplest means possible.
Which was?
Default credentials on an exposed web application. From there, they pivoted internally and they sent phishing emails, successfully compromising four employee workstations.
Okay, getting onto four employee laptops is definitely bad, but it isn't domain takeover bad. How did they jump from a standard user workstation to literally owning the entire network?
Through privilege escalation. Specifically, by abusing a default machine account quota alongside a misconfigured Active Directory Certificate Services template, which is known as ADCS.
Okay, the report mentions it's the same class of certificate template abuse behind that recent CertiGhost exploit. But for those of us who don't spend our days manding Windows Server environments, what does that actually mean? Like, how does that work?
Sure. So Active Directory Certificate Services is basically the mechanism Windows environments use to manage trust. It issues digital certificates that verify a user or a machine is exactly who they claim to be.
Okay.
But the templates used to generate those certificates are notoriously complex to configure. If a template is misconfigured, an attacker who only has standard low-level user access can trick the system into handing them a certificate that grants full domain administrator privileges.
Oh, wow.
It is the digital equivalent of walking into an office lobby, finding a blank master key sitting on the receptionist's desk, and then just programming it to unlock the CEO's office, the server room, and the vault.
Yikes. Okay, and the machine account quota. How does that fit in?
That is a default setting in Active Directory that allows any standard unprivileged user to add up to 10 new machine accounts to the domain. Attackers use this to rapidly expand their footprint. So they create rogue computer accounts, which they then use in conjunction with the misconfigured certificates to completely take over the identity management of the entire network.
Okay, so they use the misconfigured ADCS template to forge the master key. With that level of access, they immediately go after the sensitive business systems. The report details that the red team found credentials stored in plain text. They found decrypted database configuration files, and they found static Amazon Web Services access keys that were set to never expire.
Yeah, never expiring cloud keys are a catastrophic finding because once the red team had those, they moved laterally from the on-premises network straight into the cloud environment. And they escalated their privileges even further by stealing a primary refresh token, and then they abused elevated permissions within Entra ID.
Wait, let's pause there for a second. For anyone living outside the cloud engineering bubble, what exactly is a primary refresh token, and what does compromising Entra ID allow an attacker to actually do?
So Entra ID is Microsoft's cloud-based identity and access management service. It's what used to be called Azure Active Directory.
Sure.
It is the gatekeeper for all cloud applications. A primary refresh token, or PRT, is basically the golden ticket for single sign-on. When you log into your laptop in the morning and suddenly you have access to your email, your file shares, and your cloud apps, without having to type your password a dozen times, that is the PRT at work.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so if an attacker steals that token, they bypass all authentication. They don't need your password, and they don't need to bypass multi-factor authentication. To the cloud, the attacker is that user.
Oh, man. Here's where it gets really interesting, though. They use those stolen cloud tokens to access the security team's own communication channels. Like the red team was actively reading the defenders' emails. They were spying on them in real time to see if anyone had noticed the massive breach. You read that attack path, right? Like phishing, forging master keys, stealing cloud tokens, spying on security emails, and you assume alarms must be sounding everywhere.
You would think so.
But the government services sector detected absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Not a single meaningful alert. And it wasn't a failure of their detection technology. CISA found that Organization A was entirely paralyzed by alert fatigue. Their systems were generating thousands of false positive alerts every single day, triggered by just normal, benign business operations. And many of these false positives were rated as high severity.
It's exactly like the check engine light we talked about at the top of the show. If the dashboard is always flashing red, eventually the analysts just stop looking at it. But this time, the engine was actively on fire.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture organization, A suffered a structural failure. They operated multiple siloed security operation centers with zero shared visibility, so the endpoint team couldn't see what the cloud team was seeing.
Wow, that is a recipe for disaster.
Right.
Like ER doctors who aren't allowed to talk to the MRI lab.
Exactly. And in one particularly agonizing detail in the CISA report, a valid alert actually fired. A system flagged the red team's lateral movement on a configuration server.
Wait, so the technology worked. It caught the attacker.
It did. But the SOC analysts dismissed it. And they closed the ticket
Why?
because they couldn't identify who internally owned that specific server. The bureaucracy was so dense that without a clear system owner to verify the activity with MKL, they had no authority to investigate further. They just assumed it was another false positive in a sea of noise.
Unbelievable. But contrast that with Organization B, the water and wastewater entity. They face the exact same attack path, the exact same sophisticated tradecraft from the red team. But their SOC detected the initial phishing payloads almost instantly.
And more importantly, they didn't just log the alert. They took decisive action. Organization B isolated the affected workstations and they severed the command and control communications within a window of 2 to 20 minutes.
2 to 20 minutes. I mean, that is an incredibly tight window for a corporate environment.
It is the defining metric of survival. That kind of speed requires a SOC that is not just well-funded, but institutionally empowered. The analysts at Organization B didn't have to wait for three layers of managerial approval to quarantine a machine. When a clear signal cut through the noise, they had the authority to act immediately. Technology failed Organization A, but organizational bureaucracy is really what doomed them.
Yeah, so if you were listening to this and you're managing a network right now, or you're writing the code that powers these systems, or honestly, even just setting the budget for an IT department, the takeaway here is profound. Defense is a chain of interconnected processes. We started by looking at the foundational input validation flaws that developers are just failing to fix. And we saw how nation-states capitalize on those unpatched foundations to build perfect camouflaged botnets out of consumer routers.
Yep.
And finally, we saw that even when the alarms do go off, your survival relies entirely on having a cohesive, empowered security team that can actually separate the signal from the noise.
It is an immense challenge, and I think it raises a critical question for the near future. We know from CISA's vulnerability report that AI is already automating the discovery and chaining of these software flaws at just incredible speeds.
What?
We also know that Organization A was completely defeated by alert fatigue. just by thousands of false positives generated by clumsy normal business operations.
Right. The noise was their ultimate vulnerability. They just couldn't see through it.
So what happens tomorrow when threat actors use AI not just to find bugs, but to actively generate synthetic noise? Imagine an AI trained to perfectly mimic normal, mundane business operations at scale, and it's intentionally flooding a target's network with hyper-realistic false positives.
Oh, wow.
If the goal is to blind the defenders, how do you isolate a real threat in 20 minutes when an AI has autonomously generated 20,000 perfectly disguised decoys? That is the next evolution of this arms race.
That is a terrifying thought to end on, but definitely something we all need to be thinking about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, and we'll see you next time on Cyber Mornings Daily.